is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. It appears that it may be more difficult for Massachusetts students to get admitted to UMass Amherst than it is for students who live in other states. A new study from the Pioneer Institute finds that since 2010, grade point averages and SAT scores for out-of-state accepted students are lower than those for accepted students from Massachusetts. One reason might be financial, because out-of-state students pay higher tuition and fees than in-state students. But in some other states, officials have capped the number of out-of-staters allowed in their public university systems. So listeners, before we get to the conversation, we also want to hear from you. We want you to join in the conversation. What do you think? Should the state's flagship public university be easier to get accepted to for in-state students? Or is this a good way for cash-strapped public education systems to fill the gaps? Do you think the state should cap the number of non-resident students allowed? You can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. But with us in the studio right now is the lead author of that report, Mary Connaughton, the Pioneer Institute's Director of Government Transparency and Director of Finance and Administration. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Also on the line with us from Seattle is Marguerite Rosa, a research professor at Georgetown University and director of Georgetown's Economics Lab, where she focuses on education finance. Marguerite, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me. And I should clarify that it's the Edunomics Lab.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Mary, let's start with you. Tell us more about what you found, the difference between GPAs and SAT scores between in-state and out-of-state students at UMass Amherst.
Right. We did a public records request of UMass and of the Department of Higher Education. We were really curious as to what the answer would be if there were different standards for in-state versus out-of-state students. And we first got the response to our request from the Department of Higher Education. And when we looked at it, we were pretty surprised to see that there was a difference across the board for the since 2010, which is the date that we asked for. We're not sure what it was before that. Mm-hmm. We can see across the board, GPAs were higher for in-state students, as were the combined SAT scores. In 2016, the combined SAT score for in-state student was 23 points higher, and the average GPA for in-state student being accepted was 3.97 versus 3.79 for out-of-state students. Still very high, very competitive, but who wouldn't want to get into the wonderful school of UMass Amherst?
Right, but not a huge difference.
Not a huge difference, but it's an average, and it's a very consistent difference.
Mm. So why don't you tell us first, one of the reasons, of course, this might be happening is because out-of-state students pay more. How much more?
The right now, going to UMass Amherst, it's close to $30,000 all in. It's about $48,000 for an out-of-state student, and most of that is tuition and fees. It's higher for an out-of-state, more costly for an out-of-state student to come in. And when you start adding up the $15,000, $16,000 differential, that's pretty attractive for the school to get that money in the doors.
I should say we did reach out to UMass Amherst for a statement or to be on the program today to talk about this. And as of airtime, they did not get back to us. But historically, what has UMass said about out-of-state students coming in, why this might be happening, and what's going on here?
Well, the belief is that it's great to have geographic diversity for the school, so all students learn from different parts of from people from different parts of the country. But it was also the premise was that the academic rigor of the school would be increased by having out-of-state students, with the thought being that their academic achievement before coming into the college was higher. To actually raise the stakes. I mean, the University of Massachusetts has been going through the roof in terms of its national rankings, but are the out-of-staters contributing that much to it? Now, I would say, obviously, there's many out-of-state students that come in with higher GPAs, but we're just looking at the average here.
Hmm. And so I think your study said that about 26% of UMass Amherst students were non-resident students. So how does that affect, for the fall of 2016?
Right.
So how does that affect campus, do you think? And what is it doing in terms of events at UMass Amherst in the public system?
Well, the question is, what do those students do after they leave UMass? Do they stay? Do they build the bonds with the students there and want to stay in the state and work here and raise a family here, become part of the community, be part of the economic boom of Massachusetts? Or do they just come here and then take their wonderful education to another state? What does Massachusetts get out of that? Hmm. In Massachusetts right now for 2017, the appropriation from the state for UMass-wide, not just Amherst, was $720 million. So the state taxpayers are footing part of that bill.
But couldn't you also say that out-of-state students paying higher tuition is helping subsidize it for in-state students paying lower tuition?
Yes, right. Yes, absolutely. But that's the question. Are there other ways to subsidize in-state students? Could administrative costs be lower? If you're a parent and your child who's worked hard, got a really good grade point average, did well on the SATs, and their goal is to get to UMass because they're going to get a great education at a relatively low cost compared to a private school education of $70,000 now they're looking at. Is that the right way to be looking at it? Should those kids have the edge? If everything else is equal, should the in-state kids get the advantage of going to UMass? And is there a better way to fund it?
All right. Marguerite, I just want to bring you in here. How does this compare with what's happening in other states?
So I think the pattern or the challenge that's on the table here is very common with other state public universities, and that is that the university will receive some of its money from the state legislature, and that money has not grown as fast as tuition or as costs have grown at the public university. And so the universities are acting sort of in their best economic interest to try to find more revenue somewhere else, and tend to try to augment their out-of-state students because they come with a larger amount of cash. So that pattern has happened in lots of different places, and that tension has come up in lots of different places because the residents of the state will say, you know, this university is something that I've paid in through my state. It's a state resource. It's here for to augment the education of the students who live in the state and ultimately contribute to the economy of the state. And if you are catering to too many students from out of state or potentially making it easier to get in from out of state, then, you know, you're not serving that public purpose. Hmm. But the numbers do vary from different places. And there are still plenty of them where, you know, the students who are coming from out of state might actually be augmenting the student profile.
Right.
Actually, I'm not sure that this analysis clarifies that, because if you look at accepted students on the average, what you don't know is sort of what's happening on that margin for the last few students who are getting in. And oftentimes, in-state students will apply to their public university, especially the strongest students, and they might apply to other ones. So it may be the case that of the students who actually come, who are at the top of the sort of test score spread and things like that, they're not that many from the in-state. So the average of who's accepted may not be the average of who's coming. And so it's, you know, the numbers, there are two different pools, and we did a similar study a few years ago, and we really looked at the kids on the margin, like the ones that had just barely gotten in from in-state and the ones who had just barely gotten in from out-of-state, and compared those two to get a sense of whether or not it's actually easier to get in.
Mm-hmm. Mary, I want you to jump in. I just want Mary to clarify here.
We looked at both enrolled and unenrolled students, and in the same averages, I mean, it was lower for enrolled than unenrolled on the whole, but the same pattern held true in that for the enrolled students, they had higher GPAs and higher SAT scores than for in-state than out-of-state.
Okay.
Got it.
I just want to make sure we get some callers' voices in here as well. Nicolette is calling from Worcester. Nicolette, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
I just want to say, good. As a parent looking at colleges in the year and as an alumni of UMass, I had a general understanding that UMass has done wonderfully over the last 20 years in terms of rankings, but I find it extremely unsettling now having a college-age child that in-state is far more difficult as compared to out-of-state. And that was my just initial reaction. It's been interesting listening to the conversation. I know there's a lot of other factors to consider. But I do feel like that's unfortunate. I think looking at colleges, we assume as parents that, you know, it's an equal, fair sort of acceptance based on scores and what you've done over the 4 years. And to hear that you might be at a little bit of a disadvantage just living in your own state is a little bit unsettling. I hope that changes happen. After looking at these studies.
But Nicolette, I'm wondering, you know, what do you say to folks who say, you know what, bringing in more out-of-state students at a higher rate helps keep the system strong?
Right, I understand. And so I think it was just new information, you know, weighing that out when applying for colleges and understanding that it's important to know.
Okay.
That's good information.
All right. Listeners, just a reminder, we want to hear from you, too. What do you think? Should the state's flagship public university be easier to get into for in-state students or out-of-state students? Is this a way for cash-strapped public education systems to fill the gaps? Call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Marguerite Rosa, I just want to ask you, could some of what we're seeing here be because the entire system of getting into college is so much more competitive now?
I'm not sure that that's it. I think that universities are just responding to their own cost pressures. And they're just, this got teed up a little bit earlier, but there are other ways they could respond. And potentially for if you're a family that is right on the margin, you live in the state and you don't get into the university, you know, the argument that, well, this keeps the university strong if we take more out-of-state students, you know, if you didn't have access to it, that's
right.
Sort of moot for you.
Right.
So if you think, well, what other ways can we keep the university strong, both financially and academically? And there are other possible ways and that this can happen. So if the university needs more money, you know, saying, well, I can take a lower scoring student out of state at a higher dollar amount, there might be some lower scoring students in state who might say, well, I'd pay the higher dollar amount. And maybe there's a way to have a tiered tuition model inside the state that charged potentially higher tuition for students with greater means. And then you can, the state could get some money and still be loyal and keeping those spots for its in-state students. So there are other opportunities on the table, but this is one that we're seeing happen, this sort of steer toward more out-of-state students is happening across the country and creating these tensions between public universities and their communities.
Right, California. Tell us briefly about the system there. I mean, they ended up putting a cap, right, on the number of out-of-staters allowed?
Yes, and this has been kind of a negotiation that universities have with their legislatures, and other places have done the same thing. Washington State did it as well, where what happens is that in a particular year, the university might try to solve its financial problems by taking more out-of-state students, bringing in that extra revenue, meaning there are fewer spots for the in-state students. And then the legislature hears about it and says, hey, you know, we want the university to still be here on behalf of our state students. And then there's this kind of tension where the university says, yeah, but you didn't give us enough money. And the legislature sometimes says, well, we'll give you a little bit more money, but we want to make sure in return that you make the universities available for more in-state students. And some universities have responded by saying, okay, I'll do that, and I'll still take more out-of-state students, meaning we just sort of grew the enrollment. And those are other strategies to sort of solve the financial problems anyway. But I think what's happening is that universities are acting, you know, according to where the financial incentives are.
Is anybody doing that tiered tuition model right now? If you earn more, you should pay more?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I know it's come up in quite a few places, and some are saying, well, we'll raise the tuition, but we'll maybe give more financial aid. That's another way to sort of do a tiered tuition.
Mm-hmm.
But this university's expenses have risen faster than state budgets have risen. And so they find themselves in this conundrum where, you know, the state might give them a little bit more money, but it doesn't cover the growth in costs at the universities. And there are, you know, lots of opportunities here to think about this financial puzzle. And one that was just raised a little earlier was what the university might think about cutting its costs or spending less money, think about getting revenue in different areas, think mm-hmm. about growing its enrollment. Those are sort of all on the table, I think. But we are seeing universities go for the out-of-state student extra cash.
Right. I want to take some calls. Kara, as our lines are full, Carolina is calling from Worcester. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to share my experience. As a high school senior, I had a 3.8 GPA. I applied to, like, at least 10 different schools. And when it came to the state schools, I got waitlisted. And that was a huge impact on my life because coming from a low-income family, having to choose a private school over a state school, it has an impact down the road, especially with I had specifically received a scholarship that would have given me free tuition, and I had to give that up because I was waitlisted.
When was this, Carolina? When did you apply?
So I applied 4 years ago.
To UMass. UMass Amherst. Yep. And you had a 3.8 GPA.
Right, and I had above average SAT scores, MCAS scores. I'm still a great student all around the board.
Where did you end up going?
I went to Nichols College, which is a small business school in
Dudley,
Southern Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Good. And you made it. You made it okay, but you would have liked the opportunities to go to UMass Amherst, but they were not available
right.
to you.
I was looking forward to going to Eisenberg because I'm an accounting major, but unfortunately, I guess they had to look out for their pockets instead of mine.
Oof. Okay. Carolina, thanks so much for the call. I also want to go to Campbell, who's calling from Dover. Campbell, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. My son is 27 years old. He graduated from UMass, from Mass Art, which is a university system school.
Mm-hmm.
What I haven't heard you mention is what percentage of the total state university system budget is funded by taxes in the Commonwealth. Mm-hmm. It would seem to me most logical to tie a minimum percentage of in-state students to a percentage of the budget that's covered by taxes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good question. Marguerite, you've looked at strategies. Has that ever been a potential strategy before to look at percentage and decide whether that's the amount that should be allowed here?
Yes, and that's great, except then the state doesn't have enough money 1 year, and so they're funding Medicaid or K-12 education, two other very large things in state budgets, and higher ed is often sort of lower on the list, and then they can't meet those targets. So that's very much, you know, it sounds great to say we should have this number, and then I think legislators have sort of striven for that and then not been able to meet the number. Hmm. So then they say we'll give you a little bit less this year. This very much happens. Hmm. And I think part of what you'll have at least some residents will find frustrating is that, you know, they grew up in Massachusetts, lived in Massachusetts, and maybe right before they went to college could have moved across the state line and then gotten into their college, but not gotten in if stayed in the state. And then that kind of calls the question, this whole sense of what is a public university and who is it for and what are our goals as part of that.
Mm-hmm. Mary, I'm just wondering, we heard Carolina, who called in, 3.8 GPA, mm-hmm. above average SATs, 4 years ago got waitlisted at UMass, ended up going to a private college mm-hmm. instead, which presumably was more affordable. I know in the report you mentioned the disparate allocation of scholarships. It isn't something that you looked at in this report,
right.
but you mentioned it. Can you explain that?
Right. We'd like to see another project we'd like to look at is scholarships and financial aid down the road to find out how the financial aid formula really works for in-state students and try to look at tuition net of financial aid to find out what people are actually paying. That would be another study that we'd like to do.
Okay. I want to go to more callers. Line's still full. Jim is calling from Newton. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to bring up the point that I was a kid from Minnesota who applied to a college here in Massachusetts, and I got in with lower scores than the average there, but I always chalked it up that they were looking for diversity in these prestigious schools. Mm. And so I know when my daughter was looking for colleges, we were there at a pre-admissions thing, and some kid was in the audience from South Dakota, and they chased that kid down because they wanted to tick the box and get, you know, a person from every state. So I don't know whether or not their motivations are tuition-based or diversity-based in order to keep prestigious school.
Okay, good question. Mary Connaughton, you know, how much of this really can you say for certain is because of higher tuition, or are schools trying, particularly UMass Amherst, trying to attract a more diverse student body that could be more cosmopolitan and help everybody in the long run? Is that part of the argument?
I would say that's certainly a part of the argument. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say how much of the argument that is. We know how important it is to fund the school and how important money is, but geographic diversity is a very much wanted for all colleges across the country. They want to make sure that they're represented by each state. But if you have 50 states, you can get represented. But when you're admitting all these thousands of kids, you know, is that the ultimate goal, or is it really to get that extra tuition?
Right. Marguerite, what do you say about that, about how do we know that it's for extra tuition and maybe it's for geographic diversity reasons?
Well, we did a similar study to this one a few years back on another university, and called the admissions department at the university, let them know the study was coming out, and they would likely get calls. And they said, well, can you delay the release of the study because our director of admissions is overseas recruiting right now, which was very ironic at the time. But we looked at the there's quite a few international students, but they all, for the most part, came from two countries. So sometimes, you know, this claim is really about diversity, but it's not really diversifying after a certain number. You know, there may be this, you know, kind of draw, it's nice to have kids from all the different states, but there are probably also a range of socioeconomic mix and race and rural and urban, even in the state of Massachusetts. And so that's a balance to be done. But it's, you know, universities have not hidden the reality that they're doing part of the international and out-of-state students is part of plugging their budgets. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it becomes a little bit of a pay-to-play feature here where, you know, if you have the money to pay an out-of-state tuition, you can get in, and if you're in-state, you're not actually even given that option. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't even pay extra to get in. You just don't have access.
I see. I just want to take one more call. We're almost out of time. Madison is calling from Cohasset. Madison, you're on the air.
Hi. I want to keep it brief, but I just wanted to say that I'm from Massachusetts, and I actually applied to colleges 2 years ago. I'm a college student right now. And as a lower-income student, I loved the fact that UMass was more competitive, and I loved the fact that it was drawing in the best students from Massachusetts, because I felt like this was not only a good option, but this was also going to be an option for me that was attracting the best students from the state. And I was totally okay knowing that it was more competitive for me as an in-state student.
Okay, good point there. Maybe this helps make, you know, in-state schools or public university systems more competitive. Mm-hmm. And so it helps everyone. There's another argument. Mary?
Well, all things being equal, same SAT scores, and it's hard to weigh what the other extracurriculars, how far they come into the equation here. But all things being equal, if it's a state university, I would hope that they would admit the state kid, the kid, the resident, before an out-of-state kid, because it's their home. It's where they kind of count on going, and not to admit them because an out-of-state kid got it. It just seems like, you know, if you're a parent, it's heartbreaking. You're a kid, it's heartbreaking.
Right. And Marguerite, any strategies that we didn't talk about? I know we talked about the tiered tuition model and other ways to sort of help public universities get the money they need without having to have more out-of-state students coming in. What is there another strategy that you think might be a good option for schools like UMass Amherst?
Well, I think that many of these schools, you know, as I mentioned, have seen quite a bit of cost growth. And you know, the other place to keep an eye on this is to say, like, are there options to contain cost growth within the university so that we can lean on more students from in-state? And along those lines, you know, are there certain kinds of programs and things like that we want to reserve more spots for the students who are in-state? The other piece is to grow the enrollment generally. So I know a lot of universities say, you know, we're full, but you know, with new technologies and new ways to deliver instruction, maybe it is the case that we can actually increase the school by 10% more in-state students, get those students to get their spots, and grow the enrollment and still become financially sustainable.
Okay, Marguerite Rosa, research professor at Georgetown University and director of Georgetown's Edunomics Lab. Marguerite, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Mary Connaughton, the Pioneer Institute's Director of Government Transparency and Director of Finance and Administration. You can find a link to the Pioneer Institute report at our website, radioboston.org. Thanks so much for coming
in. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.